Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. We are your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. And today is a faux episode.
Faux show. Faux finishes show. For your show.
So last week we had a distressing episode.
Yes.
Discussed all of those fun facts. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of a little bit continuing on that on tips and tricks and decided to talk a little bit about faux finishes because we do them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think of anything more theatrical than taking a piece of wood and painting it to look like another piece of wood. But we do it all the time in theater.
All the time. And like we said last week, starting out, research is your number one go-to. You got to have that research. You want to make sure you're looking at something while you're doing it so you can make sure it looks exactly what you want. And that goes the same for faux finishes, specifically for woods, marbles, and anything, mm-hmm. because there's so many different varieties out there.
And everybody knows what wood grain looks like until it's time to paint wood grain. And you end up like making up something in your head that's mm-hmm. super cartoony. So just having a picture of the exact piece of wood that you want to copy, or the exact marble that you want to copy, or even better, having like an actual physical piece of that wood in front of you at all times so you can see what's going on. So one of the things with faux finishes is a lot of places you learn them is with scenic artists. Mm-hmm. So they're painting scenery. So that's great for these kind of flat surfaces. But when you get into props, you're getting like a fully three-dimensional object. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have research to see what's the wood grain look like on the end versus the edge or the face. Mm-hmm. Or how does marble look when you carve it into a curve? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just going to be like the same on all faces. It's going to look different on one end than it does on the other.
It's so true. For example, one of my very first props that I did when I did my internship at Yale, I had to create a wooden cone. So carved out a cone out of foam and then started getting some research for wood grain. And I was like, oh, that's right. It wouldn't be just a straight up and down grain. There's going to be the curves on the side of it coming up. And then like maybe on opposite sides, there is one strip that is straight, but everything else is curved because it's been turned out of wood and da 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 da. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And so that's why it's always so important to get these research, because if I would have just done it straight up and down, it would have looked really weird.
It would have looked like somebody put wood contact paper on a cone or something like that.
Exactly, exactly. So let's start off with wood grading, since we're already kind of getting into it. There are so many ways to do wood grain, and everybody has an opinion on it. You can use tools. You can just use brushes. So I like to take a chip brush and cut off some of the bristles and kind of give it a unnatural shape to it and uneven. And then when I am putting down my grain of paint, I can't accidentally fully paint a stroke. It is a natural streak of the brush.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of like stripes.
Yeah. Yes. Stripes. And you can do this in multiple ways. You can do this by doing some glazes. You can do this with just the straight up the paint, doing a very light stroke of that, and then go over again with the light brown and go back and forth with that. I know a lot of people like to use the rocking wood grain tool. I'm not a huge fan of it because I'm never really that successful with it, honestly. Mm-hmm. But you can get beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff out of that. And I know there have been many people to use it and it's gorgeous. I'm just not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, because that rocker tool is really good for making those like knots.
Yes.
You know, in wood. And it's important to, going back to your research, it's mm-hmm. like any sort of fine furniture is not going to have like big knots in their grain sort of thing. It's going to be like a very streaky kind of just the lines of the grain mm-hmm. or even like barely even perceptible grain going on. So it's only like if you're doing some primitive rustic thing, you're going to have these knots. So you really got to be careful about like going overboard with knots and things like that. It really is like that subtle effect. Yeah, it's all about multiple layers. You're not going to do it all in one go. You're going to have to
you're always
break down the grain. Yeah.
And there's always multiple colors of browns that you have because you're doing your dark and then you do a light and then you do a dark and you're layering up slightly with those. And if you are using the wood graining tool, you don't really use it the whole entire time. You might use it like once or twice because, like you just said, you know, that it's not going to be so naughty.
Don't put anything too naughty on stage.
Thank you. I was waiting. I was like, come on, there's a pun there. You can do it. We're full of puns this week and last week, guys. We're ready. One of my favorite things to do when I'm wood graining is after I have put down a few streaks of the dark brown, I like to take a flogger brush and very lightly tap over it and kind of drag it as I'm tapping when it's still wet to kind of break up what I just put down. Because if you look very close to wood, it's the streaks are kind of feathered out. They're not very solid lines. Yeah. So I like to break them up as much as I can with using that flogging brush.
Yeah, it's almost like, I want to say like mottled or something, but it's very subtle.
Yes.
And I've seen, I've done it. I didn't come up with the technique, but they showed me what to do. And it was just a brush with like really, really long bristles and holding it sideways and kind of doing that. Yeah. You're just like shaking it so that the end is kind of tapping it as you're going along. So you're like tap slash dragging it in a direction. So you get this kind of like a very subtle spatter, like breaking up the lines or something like that.
Yeah. And even when I'm taking my chip brush with the very first grains that I'm making, I try not to make it perfectly straight. I kind of try to shake my hand slightly to give it a little bit of an irregularity.
Right.
And I don't use the flogger brush when I'm doing type of layered glazes. I usually use it when I've put down my base coat that's usually a bright yellowy orange color. And then I just take my straight up paints. Maybe there's a little bit of polyacrylic mixed in with those paints, but not a lot to consider it a glaze. And then take the chip brush, do the grains, and then I'll take the flogger brush and kind of feather it out. Let that dry, do another layer with my light color or another brown that I have selected that's in the wood and keep that going, then put a glaze on top.
Yeah, and I've always been taught, and it sounds like you do this too, but when you start out with really vibrant colors.
Yes.
And like bright, vibrant colors, yeah. Even more like it's almost scary how they are.
Yeah.
Just because as you go, you're adding more glazes and toning over top. That's going to bring it back to the sort of brown.
Yeah.
But it's going to be super muddy if you start off with like these browns to begin with. Mm-hmm. And the way the stage light hits it, if you have all these colors down underneath, the stage lighting kind of picks them out. So yeah, like any sort of mahogany or something, you start off with this like purple, like almost like super purple kind of look. You're like, that's not the color of wood. It's like once it's covered with three layers of amber shellac,
you're like,
it's gonna look good.
Surprise. I've also been taught of doing a so I kind of been talking a little bit of more of like a dry brush, I guess, idea, and then a glaze. And then I also said you can also just layer up on glazes. There was once upon a time, and I don't remember when, but a long time ago when I was first learning wood grains, this woman taught me how to do like a wet brush version of it, I guess we could call it. And it was just three colors after your base, and she would take her brush. I guess it would have been a glaze. Trying to think. I feel like, yeah, technically it would be a glaze. She'd just put that on, give it maybe a second, take a dry brush, brush some of it off, take her next color that was a light, because she would start with a dark because your base was a light, and my always rule of thumb is going back and forth. And then she'd put that on, brush some of it off, and then just go back and forth until she got the look she liked. And it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I usually like to use I guess wet on wet techniques, because anytime you're using like multiple colors, if they're all wet at the same time, the edges kind of feather together, kind of mix together in a natural way that doesn't look like dry paintbrush. It doesn't have hard edges.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I was always wondering what the difference between a wash and a glaze was. And so I kind of, the last time I was writing my book, I kind of looked it up to kind of figure it out. So it sounds like a wash is when you water down paint. Mm-hmm. So it's really watery and there's not a lot of pigment in it. And it goes on very thinly. Mm-hmm. And then a glaze is when you mix paint in with a transparent medium. Like so like it sounds like you use polyacrylic or you could use like... if it's oil-based, you can mix it with shellac or you can mix it with, there's acrylic medium and that sort of thing. So, where a wash is getting like a thin layer of pigment on, a glaze is actually making a thick but clear layer that has some paint sort of suspended in it. So that's like, when you do a bunch of glazes on a faux finish, you end up with almost a three-dimensional effect where depending on how you're looking at the surface, you, you may be looking through some of the layers of paint down, which is kind of how a lot of these faux finishes achieve their effect.
Yeah.
It's not like a flat, you know, paint by numbers kind of color thing. It's like layers and layers looking through.
Very true. And you can always go too far with your layers. And so I think that's important to do tests before you ever, I mean, this is kind of a rule of thumb for any project you're doing, do a test before the actual project, but specifically with finishes, because you can say you're looking at your wood and you say, okay, I see these three main colors in it. Okay, I'll mix those up. This will be my base. This will be the one, And you think you've got it, and then you do it, and you keep adding layers, and then you get to a point where it's all muddled together, and now there is no wood grain because you've added too many layers. So I always find it important to, you know, just do a small test and figure out, okay, it just took two layers. That's good. You know, if you're putting five layers on a wood grain, that's probably way too much. And I feel like that's no bueno. I feel like that's just, now it's brown. You created brown.
Well, that's one of the things I like about props, because with scenery, you have to come up with like, we got three steps for this process. If we add another step to the process, it's another like $500 and 8 hours of work that we do. Whereas with props, if you're just doing a small handheld item, you end up like using 37 different products and like you're just maybe a little bit of this on it now, maybe a bit of that. And you just kind of like go and it's like, this needs some of this now. And you end up like 14 steps to achieve what you want.
Exactly.
It's like, can you replicate that? No. I'm kind of improvising there for a bit.
It was just happened by chance.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a brief overview on wood graining. So there's definitely... many, many other faux finishes. There's marble, which I have never actually done. I want to learn. I've just never needed to do it.
Yeah, I did it once in school and it was somebody else like guiding us through. And I've attempted marble-like finishes since then. I was trying to achieve a lapis lazuli for a prop I was working on and getting like marginally successful. It's sort of the it's the same idea as wood grain. You kind of look at the marble, see what's going on, and make a game plan of like what's the first layer you do, followed by what. So it's a lot of glazes, and you know the most distinctive characteristic of marble is the kind of grain lines. And so a lot of people, what they'll do is, you know, you put down a clear glaze and then just like sprinkle a few drops of the color of that grain. And then a lot of people like to use a feather. So they'll drag a feather and drag that paint through the clear glaze. So you just get this like wisp of a grain line. And so a lot of, you know, you look at a lot of marble and there's actually not many that have a really distinctive sort of grain stuff. And so it's really easy to overdo, like just have... What is it? It ends up like this cartoony lightning bolts like all over the place. And you're like, oh, that doesn't look like marble. It's really like, it's usually a lot more subtle. And a lot of marble just looks like, you know, pretty stone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just areas of color. It's just sponge it on. It's just light pinks on top of light whites. Don't do lightning bolts, please. But yeah, a lot of spatters, a lot of sponges, that sort of thing. It's again, it's tricky when it's a carved item, because if you have, let's say you have the grain running in a certain direction, it's gonna, what happens as it goes around a curve, you know, when you carve it away, it's not going to continue around the curve. It's going to like, you're going to be seeing the end of it sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, another thing that we do a lot is faux stains. So a lot of the time, you know, we're not using the wood that we would want, you know, we're not using cherry, we're not using walnuts, we're using pine, and we're making it look like those.
Right.
And staining actual wood, you know, there's positives and there's negatives, like there is for everything. But it's a lot quicker and easier and less smellier to just create your own stain with some paint, water, and some sealer. And I've done that for, oh my gosh, I think almost every, well, trying to think if I do wood graining more or if I do faux stains more. And I honestly don't know. It might actually be kind of balanced in between. But I really love making faux stains because you just mix up your color, add a little water, add some sealer to it, polyacrylic, and just plop it on there. It's very, very quick, very easy. And then it comes out and you're like, oh, that looks kind of nice. Like, all righty.
Yeah, I've always been too, I don't know, hesitant. I don't like using stain because of the smell and the time.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just this horrible stuff. But I know exactly what it's going to look like. I know it's going to look good. I know if I'm trying to mimic a certain wood, I just pick the stain that's that color. You know, it's English chestnut. It's red mahogany. You know, the colors of the stain correspond to the wood. So I've always been interested in either trying the water-based products or trying to do it with paint. But I've never had enough time to feel comfortable, like, experimenting. It's like, I'm just going to stain it. It's just, it's going to look good.
It's fine.
Got depth to it. It works really well. It brings out the grain. It's brilliant. It's done. And I'll just, you know, have to wear my respirator. It'll be fine.
For like 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always had great success with it. And what I do is I always wet my wood before I actually put the faux stain on, because it kind of opens up the wood a bit and allows the stain to kind of seep in more. And the thing is, you can make your faux stain a little less on the pigment when you're first testing it out and put a layer down and let it dry, come back. If it's not dark enough, you can add layers to it because it'll still be soaking down into it. And then you can hold off on your acrylic and put that on last. So you have your paint and water mixture and then the acrylic on final. I've always been a huge fan of it because I just don't like the process of staining because of, like you just said, the smell. You have to wear your respirator. And, you know, I always like seal wool in between layers when I'm staining and everything. So the faux stain, you just plop it on there, dry, doesn't need to be darker. Okay, put another layer on, call it a day, put some polyacrylic on. Yeah. I would highly suggest testing it out one day because it's pretty quick.
Cool. One of the other main types of materials that props people are always trying to mimic are metallics.
Woohoo!
And probably one of the trickiest to mimic because it's not just paint. There's sheen and there's, you know, sparkle to it. And for the longest time, like, we didn't really have any products, but more and more there's like stuff coming out that's just like kind of miracle stuff. We're still not quite at the level where you could just like spray something on and it's metallic, but we're almost there. One of the most traditional theatrical things we do is gold leafing to make something look like gold.
My favorite. Oh my goodness. I love gold leafing, guys. I could do it all day long, and I have done it all day long. I have had to gold leaf many picture frames, thrones before. It is a process. It is like glitter in the fact it will never go away. And when you're in a small shop, everybody loves you. You know, they're just so happy that there's gold leaf everywhere in the shop. So try to contain yourself. So the steps with gold leafing, if you've never done it before, is you have your adhesive, the sizing. I use Speedball Mona Lisa sizing. And you put that onto your material. Well, actually, let me back up. Sometimes you want to prep your material by painting it. Sometimes you, depending on what finish you would like, will depend on what color you'll paint your furniture, for example. If you want, I believe, like more of a antique look, you can use red. I believe, is your...
Yeah,
your,
I've heard that.
Your base. Yeah, so your base would be like a bright red. You can also use green, which I've never used, but I've been intrigued to use that. And then some people use a yellow for a very bright, bright yellow or a bright
And I've heard gold. If you do like black, it'll make it a lot cooler if you need a cooler looking.
I've never tried black, but that would make sense. I'd have to test that out.
And I've definitely heard that for silver leafing.
Yes, for silver leafing, definitely. For gold leafing, I don't know. I'd have to try it out. So after you have your base coat on, you put your sizing on, your adhesive, and you want to let that sit until it dries, which when I first started out gold leafing, I was like, well, it's tacky, so it's good, right? It's tacky. That means it's good.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be dry. So once it's dry, you get your little gold leaf square that's very fragile and like the wind will break it and it'll blow away.
Yeah.
You just lightly put it on. And then I take a very soft, soft big brush, kind of like a makeup brush, honestly, and just very lightly tap it down onto it and just keep doing that process over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And when I'm putting
the squares, the squares are only like, what are they,
4 inches
by 4 inches?
Yeah,
and you can't really get bigger ones. Or if you get bigger ones, you can't really handle them because, like you said, they blow away. They come like little tissue paper between each sheet and you kind of lift it by the tissue paper.
Yeah.
And use that to move it around. Because if you can't pick it up.
Yeah, you have to be very delicate when you pick it up.
Yeah.
Very delicate. And it's small, which is good because when you're doing furniture pieces like a throne and there's all these little crevices in it, having that small piece to put on to kind of dab in is easier than a huge piece and then it all just going away. But after you do that, you can seal it. And there have been multiple times where I've done the arm on a chair and I have to go through it again because it's so fragile. And it's so ornate of a design on the chair, you kind of miss a lot of pieces when you're putting the first square of gold leaf on. So you kind of have to go over it again sometimes. And it will go everywhere, and it will be all over you and everywhere in the room. So make sure you're not next to somebody who's painting.
Right.
Because it might go on there. I don't know. What?
Uh-huh. Unless they want gold flakes in their paint.
But I'm such a fan of it because one, it's very relaxing to me. And two, it's just very satisfying looking at it because there is no paint that you can use that I have experienced that has the same finish of this.
Right.
You know, it really does.
Because this
give
is
that
literally
shape.
Like a microscopically thin layer of actual gold.
Exactly.
Or some kind of like gold alternative.
Yeah.
But it's actual metal.
Yeah, exactly. And I just recently found out last year that they have gold leafing pins. So if you're doing a project and there's a small little section that needs to have gold leaf on it, you can take this pin, shake it up. It uses like a Sharpie almost or a paint pen. And just dab it on there, and it works pretty well. So if you're doing very small things and just need intricate little details of gold leaf and not like full sheets of it, you can use that, which is really cool.
I've always done, because you end up missing little like dots and bits here and there. I always go in with a little paintbrush with the size and just paint that little uncovered area, and then you like use like tweezers or hands with gloves on and pick pick up one of the little scraps that are like floating around the room and like just set it on and brush it on. And when you know, if you brush it on with enough pressure, that's the kind of like the seams between sheets of gold and pieces of gold kind of disappears. They kind of like meld into each other pretty well.
Yeah. And sometimes that base coat that you put on, even though it's a bright red or anything, sometimes designers and directors like to see just little slivers of that from where the gold leaf kind of crumpled up a little bit and it got all of it, but there's just a little like a hairline of red coming through. They kind of like that. It gives it a little bit of an antique look.
Right.
And you can also go over your gold leaf with a glaze if you want to tone it down. And you can distress it and stuff like that. And it just, it looks very, very nice in my opinion. And there's silver leaf, so if you ever need to get something silver, which is great. And like you mentioned, putting a black underneath. I think I've seen
copper leaf too.
Yes, there's copper leaf as well. I've never used copper leaf. I've only done silver and gold. So I don't know what the best base would be for copper. But like you said earlier, for silver, it's good to use flat black. And that also goes hand in hand with when you're spray painting like a chrome color or painting or sponging on or whatever technique you're using. Putting a flat black base on it will really help the silver chrome pop a little bit more.
Yeah, I've been using those metallic spray paints a lot lately to get these sort of metallic looks. And so I'll actually go for a gloss black. So what I do is like you get the surface as smooth as possible and then you go over with gloss black and you basically get it like pristine and perfect and smooth. Because then when you go over with the metallic, you're just kind of dusting and you're just kind of getting like the thinnest possible layer to cover it because it's gonna, if you try to like put it on super thick to make it kind of level out and be smooth, it's never gonna look good. It's gonna look really bad. So it's like getting that perfectly pristine kind of base layer. So the metallic just kind of like sticks on the very outermost layer.
Yeah.
And I've had some pretty good success with that. I just had to do these, I don't know, stainless steel, chromey kind of sconces. And I did that. It was just like the slightest layer of chrome spray paint. And then the other tip somebody told me was after you put it on, sort of while the paint's still wet, even taking flat black spray paint and lightly dusting just like from underneath at an angle. And then from a distance, it gives it that kind of depth to it. It's not just like the spray painted paint. So that's good for those like kind of really shiny silvers. I think chrome, like actual mirrored chrome, you're never going to accomplish with paint. Yeah. It's totally different from paint. It's like, it's a, I think actual chrome is like electrochemically bonded to the outside layer. It's actual metal in a thin layer. It's not paint. So that's always something that's tricky. But
which they do make, if you go to like AutoZone or something like that, they have chrome, I guess I'll call it stickers, I guess.
Yeah.
That you can apply to certain things. And some items that works really well with. Other items it doesn't, because if you have a lot of curves and a lot of, you know, details, it's not really going to sit in. But if it's just a smooth surface, like a tabletop, then that's pretty good to use.
Yeah. I've used that, the chrome, it's like chrome contact paper they have, or I've seen taking aluminum foil and just contact cementing that on as like a layer. And then there's that aluminum tape that you get at the hardware store for duct work. It's like that super shiny tape, super stiff kind of tape. And using that as at least a base layer. And you do like the little black spray paint, matte spray paint, just to dust on top of it to give it a bit of depth. But any of that sort of stuff is going to be so much better than paint. I had to do stainless steel frozen yogurt machine and I bought it was a giant sheet of stainless steel contact paper, and it's made for people who get cheap dishwashers and they want to make it look like a stainless steel appliance. You just put this giant sticker over it, but it worked great. I mean, again, it was like stiff, so you could do simple curves and straight areas, you know, that sort of thing. You can't do anything like a sphere or anything with any sort of, you know, ridges or grooves. But for the flat surface, it was great. The other thing I liked, which I the hardware store stopped carrying it, but it was appliance paint that was stainless steel. Same thing. You're supposed to, like, you got your cheap white fridge and you spray paint it stainless steel so you look all hip. But the great thing about that is it's got little metal particles in it. So you spray your prop, and then you wait for it to dry, and then you could go in with steel wool and actually like buff and polish it up.
Oh.
And when you do that, you're getting rid of all the sort of like spray paint texture, and you're making it smooth but also polished. So I did a sword blade with that, and it looks like a real steel sword blade. It's kind of amazing.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm going to have to try that out. Well, guys, we have reached the end of another episode, our faux show episode.
Faux show.
We hope all of these tips and tricks helped you out and you test them out and let us know how they worked. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache and email us with any questions or ideas for future episodes at propspodcast@gmail.com. And also check out our new Facebook page, Silk Flowers and Paper Mache Hearts. You can follow us, you can like us, and keep up to date through there.
Yeah, and head to our website at silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, where you could catch every episode we've ever recorded, as well as find a link to our Patreon page if you're interested in supporting us. And we'd like to thank our top-level supporter, Jay Duckworth.
Woohoo!
Thank you for all your support. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Podcasts or Spotify.
This has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next time.
Bye.